each individual has like a piece of a puzzle in a group. There's all these perspectives that actually need to be listened to.
Welcome to the Circle Holding Podcast with me, Julia Davis.
And me, Tessa Venuti-Sanderson. We are the co-authors of the book Circle Holding, A Practical Guide to Facilitating Talking Circles.
We would love for you to join us for free talks, question and answer sessions, all about the art of holding circle. You can find these at circleholding.org. So this week, it's Julia Davis here from the Circle Holding Podcast. And I'm here today with Andy Pace, who has a really, really fantastically interesting job working with democracy and actually getting people to speak to each other and listen deeply in circle. Welcome, Andy.
Hi there, Julia. Thank you.
I would love to hear a little bit more about what you actually do and how democracy can actually work in circle, and then maybe we'll roll back and find out how you came to do it, because I just think it's so interesting to find somebody who's actually working in a democratic world where people talk and it's a responsibility of everyone else to listen and not attack or bray at them.
So I work in the field of participatory democracy. So first of all, the idea of participatory democracy is different from what we might usually think of democracy. When people hear the word democracy, they usually think of, you know, going to the polling station, putting a cross on the ballot paper and voting every few years and, you know, voting for a politician and political parties and things like that. And that's obviously our sort of main form of democracy that we have, representative democracy. But there is another level of democracy, which is called participatory democracy. And that involves not just people's votes, but people's voices and hearing what they have to say and hearing their opinions. So, you know, there can be different levels of this. On one level, you could say, oh, well, you know, council meetings, that's a form of participation where you can go along, you can give your opinions. But there's a sort of deeper level where we really want to really know what people are thinking, and there are different forums that are created for that. So there are things like participatory budgeting, where people come along and they decide how a particular budget for a local council might put a sum of money aside to say, okay, the local people are going to decide how that money gets used. So that's participatory budgeting. Or the work that I've been doing a lot of is in what we call citizens' assemblies and citizens' juries, where people from a particular area come together, they listen to experts over an extended period of time, and then based on what they've heard, they weigh up all the evidence on a particular issue. Could be, they're all, you know, a whole variety of issues. Could be, you know, what should we do about the future of our high street, you know, shops closing down, etc., or sort of bigger issues like climate change, air pollution, hate crime, things like this, you know. So they work together, they listen to each other, they come up with various ideas based on what the evidence that they've heard, and then they put forward recommendations that are given to the council, the local government, or even the national government. And so that's the work that I do. I facilitate and design mostly in the field of citizens' assemblies and citizens' juries. And it's really all about listening to a whole variety of voices, you know, a whole variety of perspectives, and finding ways in which they can find, you know, collaborative outcomes as well. It's not about, whereas our present, you know, normal, the voting democracy is about which party is going to win, is about winner takes all. This is much more about creating a space to find common solutions. So that's it in a nutshell, but yeah, we can go deeper.
We will definitely. I thought, because it's such an unusual thing and something that maybe our listeners haven't heard about, to start off with what is it and what you do is a really good foundation for the rest of our conversation. Before we go into the detail of how you do that, how you bring those people together, how you get to talk over each other, what I'd really love to hear is how you came to do this work. So your origin story, because I think it's fascinating.
I guess it's very much connected to my own sort of personal journey. When I was 21, I started to meditate. I just got really interested in meditation at quite a young age, and gradually pursued that. And then, as part of my university, I studied French and Spanish, and I went abroad for a year. And when I was in France, I met some people who were Buddhists, practicing Buddhists. Yeah, I got really interested in that. And sort of a long story short for that, but I ended up, getting so committed to that path that I ended up living in a monastery in France. I went out there in like 98 and came away, it was sort of 2007, 2008. So quite a while I spent in this Buddhist monastery. I did a long retreat during a 3-year traditional retreat in I was a Tibetan tradition of Buddhism. It was tough time. There was a lot of sort of inner difficulties coming up, and I was reading some books, and one of them was a book by an author called John Wellwood, who talks about the concept of spiritual bypassing. And he talks about, how you can get into spirituality and totally ignore other aspects of yourself, the whole sort of developmental path about relationships, about work, about living in society, that can be ignored, and that a lot of, Westerners get attracted to some of these Eastern philosophies and actually want to just jump over all those problems and transcend them. Yeah, I got interested in that, and that sort of eventually led me to leaving the monastery and doing some therapeutic work on myself. Particularly got interested in some therapeutic modalities that are connected to sort of Jungian thought about having different personas, different subpersonalities within, different voices, and that the practice was really about listening to all these different aspects of myself, the inner child, the strong protector, the go-getter, the lazy bum, all of these aspects that we need to actually listen to and integrate, and to be a healthy person, to really get in touch with and be able to embody them. So I did that work, and as I did that, I started to think, huh, this is interesting. It's so important to listen to all these inner voices, but actually it's the same. Like, I'm a microcosm of the outer world. Like, we have all of these people in society that aren't really listened to. There's all of these perspectives that actually need to be listened to and need to be brought into how we do democracy even, So I just got interested in facilitating group work, and that led me to activists at first who were sort of practicing circle work, where they were coming together, holding small assemblies, and got interested in a Spanish group of activists who are called Real Democracy Now. And their way of doing democracy was totally different. And then that evolved, and I got interested in citizens' assemblies. And then, amazingly, after sort of doing a lot of facilitation work in 2018, I was living in East London. There was a candidate who wanted to be local mayor who said, if I become mayor, I will bring in a much more participatory style of democracy in this borough. I'm gonna make it much more open, more transparent, much less paternal, and much more sort of collaborative. And I thought, wow, this is totally up my street. I've got to speak to this person. So I just sent a tweet. I messaged her on Twitter, and she ended up becoming the mayor. She took me on to support setting up participatory democracy systems in the borough. From then on, it just sort of took off. I studied various organizations in the UK that do citizens' assembly, got in touch with me. They'd seen what I'd been doing in Newham, and that was the borough, yeah, where I was living at the time. Yeah, I ended up working on citizens' assemblies all over the country and just seeing repeatedly how actually this way of doing things does work.
What I love about what you've talked about is we don't necessarily all have the luxury of 9 years looking into our inner being. Those of us that do can make a massive difference in the world. It's amazing how many people come from that contemplative life and then come out of it into the world and are making big differences. So thank you for taking the time with yourself and for what's come out of that. It's a really beautiful thing to see. I love what you talked about with regard to the inner voices as well. I mean, that's something we could have a whole conversation about, how you bring about all of those inner voices and how you might bring them into circle. I can imagine having a circle about the inner child, having a circle about the angry me or the whatever type of me comes into a space. But maybe that's for another time.
Well, just a short aside there is that there's a psychologist called Arnold Mindell who created something called Deep Democracy, who does very much that work. And he tries to link that with the world of democracy and all that work of bringing in the different inner voices to bear on social issues. So yeah, some people to look up if they're interested.
So is at the end of the podcast, you'll be able to see the notes from today, and the notes from today will include any publications or any organisations that we mention in our chat. So thank you for that. It's know that that work is being done and that people are having the opportunity to do that. I believe that you had experiences of being in talking circles while you were in the monastery. How has that impacted on the work that you're doing now?
That's a great question, because I think it has impacted. So as I mentioned, I did this long retreat. It was a 3-year retreat. It wasn't a solitary retreat. I was in a group of, it was 15 monks together. It was in the second year of retreat, we had some big difficulties that emerged in our group. And so we had to put aside sort of going off and doing our meditative practices and just devote some of that time to actually really listening to each other. And, you know, the good thing about being in retreat there was that we had time, you know, a lot of time to be able to hear each other. So yeah, we had we had this big sort of dining table and we all sat around it, maybe not completely in a circle, but you know, the principle of sitting together, being able to see each other, listen to each other and what they were going through. And sometimes it took a really long time to go around and hear everybody. But I remember a few instances where we had real breakthroughs, you know, real breakthrough. Everybody was listened to. And then it was like a collective answer, a solution emerged. And everybody was like, yeah, that's it. And like, and you could feel it in the room. It was like a palpable experience of like, oh yes, it's almost like we as an entity have found the solution. Sometimes it was to do with interpersonal stuff. I mean, one time we had, we nearly had a fire in our retreat center. We had these like Tibetan, you know, like butter lamps, and somebody left the oil burning, and there was just fat sort of particles of this sooty fat all over the place. And we're like, oh my God, how are we going to clean this up? What are we going to do? And we went through this whole process, everybody sort of talking to each other. And then it was like, yeah, now we know what we're going to do. And like, we're off, we're into action. There would be difficulties and I would hold back I tend to be quite a reserved person. I would often hold back my opinion. And living together in such a intimate setting where you're always together, like 24/7, like every day of the year, the same people, right? You start to understand that the cause, that the effects of how your own interaction has an effect on others. And I noticed suddenly sometimes when I actually did share what I'd been withholding because I was shy or didn't want to say things, it had a real effect and a ripple effect on the group. It helped me to understand a group as like an ecosystem, a group as each individual has like a piece of a puzzle in a group. And sometimes when we're working on a jigsaw, you know, somebody has a bit of the puzzle that looks like the sky, and somebody has a bit of the puzzle that looks like, you know, a building, and they look very different. And then somebody who comes up with this piece of puzzle that looks like the sky, you think, what the hell are they on about? You know, that's really strange. But when people have a chance to be listened to, that all of those different perspectives get integrated, actually, yeah, the group then can then really move forward. And I think there's an American indigenous native saying, I think it's the Iroquois nation statement. They say something like, we sit in a circle and we talk until the obvious appears, or something, until the obvious arises. And I had that experience in the monastery, that you can do that. It is possible. And that informed me and think, well, can we actually bring that out into society?
I would love to know, first of all, how you got people, all the various people who would need to have a say but to make a difference, into a room at the same time.
In Newham, there were two types of things that happened. There was what we call the community assemblies, and they took place in very localized areas. So it would be like a sort of a few neighborhoods, and it would be an open invitation. It would be there would be like banners outside tube stations, lots of posters everywhere, you know, quite a large outreach effort to get people to come along to talk about the future and what they felt were priorities in their local area. That was one style of assembly that we created in Newham. And then there was another style that came on a bit later, which was the what we call the Citizens Assembly, which has a quite a standardized format. And there's a very particular way of inviting people into those spaces, which is, it's a method called sortition. It's like they used in ancient Greece, except this is open to everybody, not just males of a certain age. Letters get sent out with an invitation with the mayor's name on it. You know, this comes from an official source. You know, it could be a large number, like 20,000 letters get sent out, inviting people to come along to give their opinions on this particular topic. You're going to be asked to respond to this particular question. It could be like, how to reduce carbon emissions in the borough to reduce the effects of climate change. People have the opportunity to respond. They can either call a free phone number, or they can go onto a website, register their interest. But the point is here that you build a pool of people who are interested in coming along. Not everybody can attend. So let's say 300, 400 people respond. You then, from that pool, select your final 50 people, let's say, and they represent a cross section. So we make sure that it represents the different age groups, genders, ethnicities, even attitudes on climate change. You know, are you concerned about climate change or not? And we try to make as much as possible a representative sample of the borough, so that when they come together and work on this issue, it's as if a microcosm of Newham has responded to that question. And that's the same principle everywhere we do citizens' assemblies, is it's like the people have spoken as much as possible. Just people of all different backgrounds in a room, you know, different education levels, and they come together and they work on this issue together. And it's not, you never really see anything like that. Well, I not seen anything like that anywhere else, because we tend to stick in our own little tribes, for, you know, communities of interest or communities of identity or whatever, you know, but rarely a real representative of a place, you know, a real representative cross section. So yeah, it's amazing. And people are it's they go through a whole process. It's long. It's about 30 hours in total. So they have loads of different sessions. They eat together. They get a chance to know each other. Yeah, so they go on a bit of a journey together themselves.
I mean, that is amazing. And you'll notice when you listen to other episodes of the podcast that it's very demographic based. So we've got men's circles and, mother and baby circles, and you know, very, and it works well having a very specific together. But you're right, it's a unique thing, or it's very unusual thing to have every race, color and creed, age and demographic in a room together. You mentioned 50, so if you're in a, a big borough, 50 doesn't sound like very many, but if you're running a circle, 50 is a lot of people. Like 12's a nice number for a circle of people. So how do you ensure in a group of 50 people, what does a circle look like with that number?
Doing everything in a group of 50 is too much. We have a number of facilitators, maybe six or seven facilitators, and we do small group table facilitation. Can range between six to eight, nine people maximum sitting around a table. Or sometimes we even get rid of the tables and we just have people, come together in clusters. And then, yeah, we have that principle of like, although we don't explicitly call it like holding a circle, it is pretty much that. We are working with a small group of people, working with particular questions. So we break down the issue into chunks. We listen, have different experts speaking, and then we want to hear from the local residents, the local citizens, and we want to make sure that each of them has an opportunity to speak. And obviously, all the usual aspects of facilitation come in there, or of deeply, active listening and some reflection sometimes, reflecting about what we've heard as facilitators, making sure that those who are more vocal, gentle prompts for them to step back and let other ones who are more shy step forward.
When you bring those people together, they're there for a particular length of time in a group together. What have you seen happen beyond that? Have you seen changes in the way those people interact with different people in the group? And does it have a ripple effect as well?
Over the period of, there may be, it may take place over, let's say, 3 or 4 weekends, or it may take place over a number of evening sessions. But when people arrive, they're very nervous. They're like, what the hell have I signed up for here? Oh, and just to let you know, one element that I forgot to say is that because it's such a long and committed process, people are given some recompense for their time. So they're given like, shopping vouchers or something at the end of it to thank them from all the time that they've spent. So that's one way that we make sure it's really diverse as well, because people who are not have the means to give their time away actually get some recompense. Anyway, people come in, they're a little nervous. We do a lot of icebreaker activities at the beginning to get them to feel comfortable with each other. Sometimes throughout the process, we'll even break it up and, because sometimes it's quite heavy topics. We'll break it up and just get in a circle and do a game, zip zap boing, sending a silly ball around the circle or something. And that loosens things up and helps people to atmosphere feel a bit more fluid. But yeah, over the time, we do see people change. And I think the great thing about having a long process as well is that you can try out different things, because people have different styles of learning. And, you have some experts who come in and present, and they can present, they can be quite academic, even though we encourage them not to be. And that's not such an interesting, for some people, it just flies over their heads. So for other sessions, we might then introduce something like appreciative inquiry. I don't know if you've heard of that. That's all about letting their imagination loose. What is the ideal Newham that you would like to live in? And then could you get, we're going to give you a whole bunch of materials, some pens, paper, all kinds of cardboard and felt piece, and just make a piece of artwork that represents what that is. And then you can speak to that. And for some people, that lights them up, and then they're transformed and they're completely different people, and they feel into what we try to do is make it as democratic as possible, understanding that people have very different ways of expressing themselves. People do have quite often a transformative experience, and then after it, the ripple out effects is if the process is designed well, there'll be some kind of opportunity for follow-up so that they can then become perhaps, if they want to be champions of that issue, like if you're working on air pollution, they can then go out into the community and actually have opportunities to speak to others, or there'll be some sort of role that is continued, or they'll be able to continue to meet to monitor the council's progress and how they're doing with the issue.
You've introduced some really interesting tools and techniques that you used. I didn't think when we started this conversation you'd be talking about arts and crafts. How are you ensuring that the facilitators actually have the knowledge to share these?
There's a delicate balance to bring together here because, on the one hand, it's a democratic process on a serious topic, and you want as much as possible to have serious conversation and a serious set of recommendations that come out of it. So that side is really, you can't mess with that. And at the same time, when you're facilitating a space like this, it's got to be a human space. I've been fortunate to work with some really great organizations. I'll give them a plug here. Shared Future, Involve, Mutual Gain. And they bring together facilitators who are really experienced, not just in the sort of democratic world or the political science or the world of debate, but in the art of bringing together people for a human relational experience, because that is what ultimately is going to bring the best out of them and make them relaxed and open and be able to share their opinions. You know, if someone is feeling a little nervous, they think they're going to be attacked, they're not going to be able to share what they think. They're going to be all sort of clammed up. So that's our role, is to help people feel relaxed, make it a friendly space.
Favorite methods and what kind of character, where's your happy place?
I really enjoy being an innovator. I love the whole idea of sort of pioneering new ways of doing things. So I like to innovate the innovation and I voices, you know. And even if you have 50 people in the room, you may well not have the voice of the homeless, or you may not. So trying to introduce exercises where they'll consider different points of view, I think, is really important. What other things do I really like in terms of facilitation? I mean, I think the basics for me, there's a particular method that I really am a big fan of. And I have a couple of mentors that are actually based in the US. They are big advocates for something called dynamic facilitation, which works on the principle of really deeply listening to a person and actually using a lot of reflection. So reflecting back what you've heard, so that person feels really deeply heard. It's not like, yes, oh, thank you, very interesting, next person. You know, there's an element of like, okay, so I hear you're saying this, this, and this, and trying to tune in as much as you possibly can to their, not just what they're saying, not just the ideas, but also the emotion behind it. So I hear you're really feeling frustrated about this issue and you really would love to do something different. And it also is, it works on the principle of bringing out solutions as well. So, okay, I hear you're really frustrated. You would love to see, you know, you're worried about children's lungs in this issue of air pollution. And so what would you like to see? Dynamic facilitation is a really good tool when it comes to interpersonal conflict. So someone else says, no, you know, I don't want to bring in any of these issues that are going to, don't want to bring in any of these measures that are going to reduce air pollution in London. This ULEZ is terrible. It's stopping us driving our cars, you know. So, okay, so I hear you're frustrated about the fact that your freedoms are going to be limited. So you have concerns about this. Let me hear all of your concerns. And so it really, the facilitator is really sort of taking the discussion away from people fighting and just one by one really drawing out as much as possible. In terms of the principle of holding circle, dynamic facilitation is a very, very interesting method to have a look at, because it has resonances with sort of therapeutic techniques of really helping a person to feel heard, feel honored, and also creating a safe space where creativity can come out in a group as well. Because people feel that they don't need to battle to be heard, you know? Because that's one thing that as human beings, we're always struggling to be, oh, I want to be heard, you know?
And you can imagine that the skill set needs to be reasonably high for all of these things to work. What does the, is there a variety of ages and demographics in the facilitators themselves? I just wondered, amongst the facilitators, how important is
I
diversity?
mean, it's facilitating a really diverse room, and all of your facilitators are white males, for example. It's not right, really. Doesn't help people to feel that they're part of this. It feels that there's a power imbalance, and so yeah, that is something that all of these public participation organizations really take to heart and try to make sure that their pool of facilitators is diverse as possible, different ethnicities, different age groups as much as possible. There's still work to do in this area, I'm sure. Like, as you say, you can't have a room of really diverse people and it's just one demographic who are the facilitators. It's just not the right thing. I think we're starting to recognize we need to actually have like schools or facilitation courses where there's sponsorships available for people of all different backgrounds to be able to become facilitators and that have those support structures to make it what you're suggesting happen.
I'm wondering whether moves are being made to take this higher up the ladder. So you've talked about local community. I would love to see honour, care and attention and deep listening happening within Parliament or within, at the level where people are elected and then see people actually listening to each other. It might be a dream, it might be a vision, but that's what I'd love to see. Can we send this up?
Well, as they say in America, amen to that. Wouldn't it be amazing if people could really listen and respect to each other? Like you say, the debate and the combat is so ingrained, isn't it, in that way of doing things. Like we talk about listening circles or holding circle. Parliament is the opposite. It's rows of benches facing each other. It's set up for attack. And interestingly, in Parliament, the actual distance between the benches used to be an arm's length plus a sword, right? It's a sort of combative mindset that the whole thing is structured around, and I think that's the difficult thing right now. A lot of this to do with our paradigms that we're living, that we're living in this sort of very deeply embedded paradigm of separation. Some of the principles that our whole society is built on are not conducive to sort of more collaborative and relational. Hopefully we're a part of that culture shift, that there is a culture shift. I think there can be roles in the future for all the kinds of holding circle that you talk about, to have a direct effect on how we connect with each other, how we respect each other, how we decide how to live together. I think that is so fundamental. My dream, I guess, is of that integration. And there's something else I'd like to flag up, which I just read as a paper. It's called Transformative Social Systems. Somebody came up with this idea of all these different modalities that can include yoga and meditation, but also different forms of people coming together and collaborating in a circle. I'll share the paper with you. It's an amazing paper. And I think there's a potential for this whole field of transformative social systems to influence our political democratic systems. That for me is something I hold really dearly.
Any final words about the democratic process and circle that you'd like to share with us?
Yes, couple of things. One thing is I've just written a paper. It's a bit long, but it might be of interest to people. It's called The Holistic Paradigm as Democracy's Evolutionary Frontier. Bit of a grandiose title, but yeah. And in that paper, I talk about deliberative democracy and how some of these holistic modalities can really make a difference to that field. And also, I'm involved in with a nonprofit organization in the US called COINTELLIGENCE Institute. And I think a lot of listeners might be interested in that because a lot of the principles for building what we call a wise democracy, a wise democracy that in service of, you know, the life of all the planet, of all beings, of all future. Principles of wise democracy are very much based on a lot of these principles around feeling deeply heard, around coming together in circle, around bringing diverse perspectives and creating systems that harvest their collective wisdom. So that's something I very much like to as well. Co-intelligence Institute is called, created by Tom Attlee, who's a real inspiration for me in my work. And also the work of Rosa Zubizarreta, who I mentioned also, who's an expert facilitator, deeply knowledgeable in sort of group dynamics and group work as well.
I think we're going to have a lot of interesting information in the notes from today's episode. I am so delighted, Andy, that you've taken the time to speak to me today. You really give me a huge amount of hope for our local communities and for democracy and society going forward. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Julia. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for inviting me.
You've been listening to the Circle Holding podcast. I've been Tessa Venuti Sanderson.
And I've been Julia Davis. We would love for you to rate and review this podcast. A 5-star rating means more people will find us.
We're the co-authors of the book Circle Holding, A Practical Guide to Facilitating Talking Circles.
Thank you for joining us today.
You can find our trainings at circleholding.org. We hope that you find a community where you can be authentically you very soon.